It is a rainy September 20th, 2021, and this is Atlanta United FC Weekly, a Home Before Dark podcast. Ooh, new bottle. That's new bottle, who this?
New riff?
Yeah.
I have not had that one yet.
It's good. It's kind of tough to find at some places. It's a relatively newer, I've seen it popping up a little bit more over the past couple of years. But yeah, I got it whenever I was up in Buffalo last time. So
nice, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the, sometimes I'll listen to Dad's Drinking Bourbon. I think they did New Riff.
Yeah.
Not so long ago.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's relatively new. This is from fall 2014. So they've got some single barrels and stuff. It's a high rye bourbon. So yeah.
Oh, nice, man. I'm off the drink tonight.
Oh, no. What are you doing?
I've got a surgery on my pinky finger tomorrow.
What did you do?
Oh, so I can't straighten it.
What did you do? Is that when you broke it like
2 years ago?
Years ago and just taped it?
Didn't do anything. Yeah. But now I'm fine again. It's sorted out tomorrow.
You make me feel like I need to do something about my shoulder. I heard it like a month ago and it's still kind of clicking. And I'm like, maybe do I just deal with it? But you having a pinky that you can't straighten out makes me feel like maybe I don't want it to heal to where I can't move it.
It's like, what was it? One of the I Know What You Did Last Summer parodies where you've got the guy with the little hand with the baby's hand.
Oh, yeah, it's yeah. Like, the scary movie, too. Take my strong hand.
Take a hurt your child. That's what my little pinky's like.
That's great. Yeah. That's really great.
Old man injury special. That's right.
That's it. All right, everybody in the trap, thanks for tuning in. Andy Watkins, Dean Worley, oh, everybody from the Slack tuning in. Joe Johnstone, Elliot Beaven, Chiefs Coach Steve, Jay Hannibal, Kendrick Brock, Michelle, Dirty Bird Person, Bradley's D, Richard Gordon. Man, good turnout already. Awesome. Love seeing you guys in here. Thank you so much. Saw a good bit of you guys out there Saturday. Saw Steve and Annabal, Geo. Who else did I see out there? I saw a couple other people out there. I missed Michelle. I heard she was at the game, but I didn't see her. Joe Johnstone FaceTimed me after the fact just to tell me how lucky Clemson got to not lose to Georgia Tech, and I was not in a good way at that point of the night. So,
yeah, Clemson hasn't been great.
Not good. It's not good. It's really not good.
Is Dabo Sweeney still there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh. It's a whole lot. It's a whole thing. I'm not going to get into it. I won't bore you with the details, Dan.
Because it's too painful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. It's going to be okay. It's not going to be our year this year, but it's going to be okay.
What I really appreciate is those SEC shorts. Because have you seen those little skits they do?
Yeah.
And what's great about it is every year there's one about Georgia and hope.
Yeah. Yeah. My favorite one for week one was like the SEC fan was, or the USC fan, the South Carolina fan was like, yeah, Clemson lost. And they're like, yeah, but so did you. It's like, yeah, but so did Clemson.
Yeah. South Carolina are terrible. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. I agree, Elliot. I really wish Florida would have pulled it out on Bama. That was a tough loss there. But anyway, this is a soccer podcast. That's what we're here to talk about. And we couldn't have better things to talk about with Atlanta United's run of form lately. My God, was it 7 of their last 8 now that they've won? Incredible, man. Incredible. After going 4 straight and now they're on to 3 straight, their last 3 winning with a combined score of 10-2. Just nuts. Ridiculous. I think we are in 10th in the East at one point, if not lower, and we are now sitting in 4th. Is that right, in the East?
Yeah.
Just something crazy, like, man. What is going on right now?
Well, part of it is we're awesome. This other part of it is the how unstable the East is, because I think if we win, we could go up to 2nd this weekend. But if we lose, there's potential we go back down to 10th.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a slippery slope. Oh, we're in 6th right now. Sorry. Yeah. We could go up to 4th this weekend, right? Is that what it was?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
4th, 2nd, meh.
I mean, there's, what, 8 points separating 2nd from 7th or something like that? I mean, it's pretty tight in the East, to your point, Dan. I mean, it's all over the place. They rise, they fall, but Atlanta United seems to really be firing on all cylinders, I must say. I mean, even this past weekend, I love to see it, because I feel like I kept trying to hold back, and part of me still is. I feel like the past couple seasons have been so hit or miss, and it's just been such a roller coaster that every time I get bought in that the team is like, oh man, this is, we're getting back there. You know, it's just the bottom falls out. And I feel like I've been like that over the past 10 matches now, where it's like, well, let's not get too excited yet. Like, right. Yes, we beat Orlando, but they haven't been playing good. Yes, we beat Cincinnati, but it's Cincinnati. Yes, we beat so-and-so, but that DC win was the first real time where I felt like, oh shit, we might have a shot at this thing. Like, this seems like the team is really, really clicking in a way that they haven't in quite a while.
Well, the good thing about it is that we beat DC this time, but then we beat them again on the road, kind of. And that was before, that was still under Valentino. That was before Pineda.
Right.
So there's, I feel like there's a foundation that's solidifying that we can stand on now to potentially punch up, but there's still, I mean, I'm still nervous. Because the East is so volatile, like we were saying, is you can't take anything for granted right now.
No.
And I'm sure we're going to slip at some point, but I mean, there's every chance that we can just keep climbing. I mean, I think we could potentially we could finish 2nd, because nobody's going to catch New England.
No. Yeah.
But I'm hearing the realistic position is 3rd.
Yeah. So
either way, I mean, I'll take
it. Which I would love, because I think, who was it that said that Atlanta would finish 3rd in the East? Oh, that was me. That's right. How could I forget?
Yeah.
To that point, we have several points, and much credit where credit is due. Our boy Tim racking it up against Cincinnati. Called the score correctly, called 4-0. His goal scores, he had Araujo, Martinez with a brace, and walks. He picks up 2 points for the goals, 3 points for the correct call, for a total of 5 against Cincinnati. You and I didn't do so bad either. We both called the win, and we both had 2 goal scores correctly with Araujo and Joseph Martinez. So we both picked up 3 there. You and Tim both picking up 2 points this past weekend against DC, calling both the win and a Barco goal. I called a 0-0 draw. I got nothing. The race continues. So, but it's heating up.
Is Tim ahead of me now?
He is definitely ahead of you now. He is actually, no, you guys would be tied now, because he was sitting at 10 and you were sitting at 12, and he picked up 2 points on you against Cincy because you still got 3 and he had 5. So you guys are tied right now.
Oh, man.
You guys are tied right now. So, yeah, it's close. It's coming down to the wire there. That should be fun.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get into this thing, man. What a What a great week. What a great week. So so let's start with Cincinnati. I tweeted about it, and I think that – I don't know, man. I know everybody's got their opinions, and yes, it was just Cincinnati, but I was so excited to see Araujo get his first goal. And I felt like the quality of goals scored that match weren't just scrappy pickup goals. Like, all four of them were really quality and came from a variety of different ways that I felt like that may have been the most impressive set of goals in one game. Like, if people will argue like the game where Kratz scored back-to-back free kicks, and rightfully so, may top it, but those four goals were pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, Barco with the free kick, that was just insane. I mean, I've that's the first one free kick we've scored directly from since Kevin Kratz put those two in against Montreal. But yeah, so I was not expecting that free kick to go in. Barco just keeps going from strength to strength. He's exceeding my expectations, the very low expectations I had when we were, trying to, talk myself off a ledge. And then I'm trying to remember the Martinez goals. I mean, the Araujo just scored a world-class banger. I mean,
yeah,
come on, just zip him past. I think he took on Velo and Mariata and just took it.
Dude, every time, man. Every time he touched the ball, I'm like, what is going on? He just manages to beat defender after defender all the way down from midfield until he's inside of the 18 every single time. He almost scored again that way against DC this past weekend. I mean, just ridiculous.
He's such a talent, and I'm so surprised that we have managed to get him. Like, we're taking advantage of all the financial problems that Ligue 1 have had, and being able to get a steal in him. I mean, it's crazy. And he didn't seem to have much interest from any other team in Europe, which I think to their detriment, but maybe it was also because of the volatile
market. But he wasn't really playing much for Lille, right? Like, wasn't he coming in as a substitution for the better part of the season?
Right, absolutely. He was. He wasn't, but that's the thing. Like, you would think, even though I would still think that he could absolutely perform in Europe.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
In a different team. I mean, he could probably, go to the Championship. I don't know if the Premier League, that might be too much of a reach, but I'm still shocked that we managed to get him. Not that I was shocked that we got him when it was announced, but after seeing him play and what he can do, it's just, I mean, he's the reason why we're so exciting to watch. Like, just adding that extra layer of sauce.
And I've been trying to figure out what it is about him, right? Like, yes, it's the quality on the field, but it's like, we've sat here over the past couple of weeks and talk about how he has elevated the entire team as a result. And yes, it comes in his contribution in the run of play, but it seems like everyone's play has been elevated to some degree that isn't directly related to just a run of play in which Luis is involved in, right? And the more I think about it, I think it's sort of this like powder keg scenario with Atlanta United, where there was all this pressure building of expectations, right? Like, you had Barco, who had continued to be this, highest paid DP for Atlanta United that hadn't lived up to his true potential, was not going to reach that $30 million, price tag that we assumed that he might have gotten at one point in time. You've got Joseph Martinez, who's coming back from an injury and struggling to find his way within the team. You've got all of the managerial issues and the front office transitions and what's happening with our manager. And then you've got an interim manager, and then Pineda comes in. And then on top of all that, you get Araujo's in here, who comes in, doesn't really get any interest from any of the other European clubs, to your point, but just sort of takes it in stride, and not in the way that I feel like The only like-for-like comparison I can think of with him is trying to compare him to the way that Pity came in. And it's not trying to compare player to player. I know they're completely right. different players, play different ways, mm-hmm. different styles. But the mentality of how they both approached coming into Atlanta, whereas I felt like Pity came in and were sort of given the keys to the kingdom, so to speak, a South American player of the year and all of this other stuff. It never really lived up to that, whether it was just the way he approached it or whatever, versus Araujo, whose first quote when coming to MLS was, I'm excited to show MLS who Araujo is. And he sort of took on that chip on his shoulder that just sparked everybody else to be like, oh, fuck yes. Like, I've got something to prove, too. I've got, you know, it was the managerial staff, the other two DPs on the team. Like, everybody wanted to play up to that level, and it all just sort of dominoed at the right time in a way that I don't think we've seen with other signings coming into the team. You know, I can't think of another signing. I mean, we've only had a few midseason signings, you know, Remedy being probably the last one of note that was really impactful coming in midseason, but certainly one of the most impactful signings we've had come in and make a huge difference, not just in what he's contributing to the team, but what everyone else is contributing as a result of playing with him.
Yeah. I feel like his play has helped elevate Barco. Like, he's lightened Barco's load. And he's still, I mean, he's 24, so he's still young. He's scrappy, he's hungry. And he's allowed Barco to not throw away any of his shots, you know, putting in the three free kicks in. And Barco's time since his comeback for the Olympics, he's just seemed much more relaxed.
Oh, yeah.
Much more focused. So I think he's the most impactful midseason signing we've ever had.
I mean, it's crazy. You even look at, like, we talked a couple weeks ago about, like, Miggy, right? And, like, there was this electricity about how he plays. And it's almost like this sort of childlike wonder that Miggy, yeah. like, whenever he touches it, like, it's like a kid that just, it's the football is life from Ted Lasso, right? Versus he's not a Roy Kent player, but with the way that Luis Araujo approaches the ball, it's like, he's threatening, like, he's intimidating in the way that he goes at guys in a way that Miggy wasn't. He was intimidating in that he was so erratic and sporadic in the way that he played that it would shake people because they didn't know what to expect. Araujo is the exact same way, but in a completely different, like, personality type.
Yeah, he's so much more positive and doesn't, you know, Pity seemed to wear his frustration on his sleeve, you know. And
yeah.
Araujo seems he hasn't either got frustrated or he can just deal with it.
Yeah.
Much better.
Yeah, it's been awesome, man. Sort of unrelated to the Cincy game or the DC game for that matter, a little bit related to DC game, but talking about that powder keg and some of the pieces that have sort of changed the way that this team is not only playing, but the way that they're sort of coalescing. And I feel like it was something, who was it that was talking about it? Michelle is saying that the players seem to be having fun again, and I'm here for it all day long. And also mentioning Araujo's energy and that the players in the crowd feed off of it. One of the things that, give it up to Pineda for coming in and sort of shaking up the team culture in a way that we haven't had managers do before, and not just inside the locker room, but I don't know if you heard about it or knew about, like, the players getting up on the capo stand at the end of the DC game.
Oh, yeah.
And how Pineda's, like, spurring the players on to get more involved with the fan base, talking about having supporters groups attending training sessions at least, like, once a month or something like that. Like, that is something that has been overlooked, and I don't think anybody's really even acknowledged that there has been, even though we all kind of feel connected to the team in a way, there has been this sort of separation between fan and club that I am really on board with Pineda sort of injecting some of that, because I feel like that's what Seattle really has at its core, right? Is like that team to fan base connection that Atlanta United has, but it's sort of an implied one versus this explicit connection that he's trying to get established between players and fans.
Yeah, I wonder how much of it is, like, I'm glad that Pineda is, whether it's his idea, but either way, I'm glad he's either agreeing to it and pushing the players towards it, because there's a lot that had to be mended between the fans and you know, the administration of the team, and it's absolutely just going to help with all that interaction. You know, Gressel was always really good at that. He you know, when we won the cup, he just grabbed
that was
it
the
and
first
took it
place
over
he
to
went
the
right right
supporters section, and after the game this weekend, he went over and saluted the supporters as well, so which was very cool. But yeah, it seems like it's a much more positive place. I'm fully behind it. I mean, even just in Pineda's press conferences, the amount of detail did you listen to his press conference after the DC game?
I listened to it after the Cincy game. I don't think I listened to it after the DC game.
So he was just going into, like, one, he's a stats man.
He was talking about, like, Miles Robinson's, like, travel right. time and all that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Go ahead. I don't want
and
to cut
you off.
And he
would go through, yeah. Oh, that's okay. But he was going through just all the different, like, the number of games Miles has played, the minutes he's played, the miles he's traveled, all that sort of stuff. And it was really cool that he, you know, obviously had a meeting with the assistants who were letting him know, hey, here's a flag for you. And he'd obviously like, oh, it's like, oh, this is really interesting. Okay, well, we should definitely make a decision on this. I mean, to me, that's a perfect example of how the process between the backroom stats staff and the coaching staff should work.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
just it's, you know, it's a tool. It's another data point. It's another piece of information to consider. So I don't know. So far, I'm really impressed with it, and I like how it seems to all be coalescing.
Oh yeah, man. And it seems to be all of the things that Atlanta United fans have really been clamoring for, right? Like you take all of the things that you want to throw at this run of games over the past 8 matches out of the equation. You can't deny the fact that regardless of the opposition or the circumstances surrounding the game of why or why not, they may have lost under different circumstances or whatever, it has been extremely exciting to watch in a way that I can't think of a run of 10 games over the past 2 years has been since maybe some stretch kind of in the middle of DeBoer's first year, where you had Open Cup and Campione's Cup and all of that kind of bled together in that 10 game stretch right there in about a 2 month span.
Yeah. I think it was 6 weeks. All that in 6 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's been really exciting to see. I mean, I don't think the team's won 4 straight since that season. So that seems to make that seems to add up there. So the fact that they're on pace to, you know, go potentially win 4 straight again this weekend after winning 4 straight. I mean, it's crazy, man. It's absolutely crazy that this team has sort of found a spark to really ride out the back half of the season. And I certainly hope it continues. And all that's to say, like, whenever we kind of switch gears back into the games again, like what's really impressed me has been how not only the goals have been coming, but how and who they've been coming from. You expect to see Barco and Joseph and Moreno and Araujo scoring. I don't mean to say that, but I just mean who is playing in these lineups and seeing the rotational lineups or the rotation that's taking place inside the lineups, to where now you've got George Campbell, who comes out of nowhere over the past 4 games and has played really, really well, all things considered. I mean, you've seen him come in for walks whenever he was out. He played this past weekend whenever Miles was getting rest. And that's what you need. You've got to have those depth pieces that aren't just there when you need them, but you have them established in a manner that you have that flexibility to change tactics mid-game, which we saw play out exactly against DC. You know, for Pineda to switch out, who was that? Did he pull off?
Pulled off Campbell and
Campbell and put on Araujo. Like, for him to do those kinds of tactics, like, he knows that he's got that flexibility in the lineup and who he's got phasing in and out to give him some tactical advantage. speaks a lot, not only to the core lineup, but to the depth that we have on the team throughout all of the positions. We can talk about center and midfield separately, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, since you brought it up, I mean, it was a risk making that sub.
Oh, absolutely.
But it was good that Pineda had that mentality of thinking, okay, we can probably take this team. So let's just go for it. Let's just push. And that's what we all want. That's what we all want as fans. We want them to go for it. So I was really happy to see that. Man, I'm surprised it's taken this long, but Cincinnati, your boy Franco coming up with 2 assists. I mean,
no kidding, man.
It's like man of the match almost.
I mean, Walks didn't have that. I'm just saying, Walks hasn't set a team record for.
No, he's just scored goals.
Oh man, I gotta circle around to the trap. We've been neglecting everyone in here.
Tim's not here to keep us honest.
Yeah, no kidding. Araujo from Chiefs coach Steve Araujo's has been the promise realized of several different players. Also, Pineda has been amazing. Let's see here. Carlos Rangel. Gressel is still connected to the fans. He wanted to make us happy and gave a secondary assist on Joseph's goal. Let's see here. Kendrick Brock talking about Pineda's rotating players. Pineda rotating players is nice to see. Tom Schreck, that's a new name in the trap I haven't seen before. Having depth to rotate is nice to see too. Yeah, completely agree there. Yeah, I mean, to Elliot's point, were you surprised? I certainly was. And I mean, in our group text, I think I had texted out like, Araujo's on the bench. Are we panicking? Like, we're not panicking. I'm definitely panicking. But again, like, you don't want to just wear him out. And I don't think that was really the case on why he was sitting. I think that, again, it goes back to what the team is capable of, that you don't have to have all 4 of those guys running nonstop for a full 90 minutes to get a result.
Right. I mean, I was just interested that he would bench Araujo, but then I was like, well, he's going to be a killer to come off the bench, you know, because he's going to be bringing him on. He's not going to let him ride the pine the whole 90 minutes. Yeah. It was good to see. Who did he have in place? Okay, so he had Sosa, Rosetto, and Moreno in the midfield at that point. So, yeah, and then it was great that we had Sosa back, so we were able to kind of make that switch, albeit, you know, maybe a little bit more defensive. And, you know, DC do what they do. They press you. And under Hernan Losada, he's been great for DC. They're a much more fun team to watch now. But they, you know, they will press and press you real hard. And they're a decent team as well. They're like, they've got a lot of talented players, you know, especially in Paredes. Skundrich has been doing really well under Losada. Whatever you think about Ariola, I think Paul Ariola is a pretty good player, and Julian Gressel. And I think Russell Knauss, I just like him because he doesn't get the best ratings. He just does the dirty work. He's like, I think it's Christian Leitner. That's it. That's the guy that everybody hates, but he does the work to make the midfield work. I mean, he's not going to be the guy who's a playmaker or press as much because he's kind of slow, but he will help you. You want him as a center defensive player.
Yeah.
But overall, I mean, yeah, it's great to be having the depth. I think if we go back to Cincinnati, sorry, I feel like I'm jumping all over the place, but having...
Whenever you've got 2 games in a week, you can't kind of just break them all down. It's totally fine. Go ahead.
But Jake Mulroney spelling for Bello against Cincinnati, he played great. I think you get subbed for. I'm not exactly sure who you got subbed for, but he was great to spell that position. It was great to give Bello a break coming back from international duty. We could kind of ease him in. Like, people were worried that Bello was injured or something, but I think we saw on Saturday that there's no water in that. So, but yeah, played great. Can you remind me about Martinez's goals against Cincinnati? I'm pulling blanks on them.
Oh, that's a good question. I think one of them was the set piece header goal, right?
That's right.
Let me see.
Oh, here. That's right. Because Moreno knocked it in and Franco headed it back towards Joseph.
Yeah.
And Joseph knocked it in. And Franco was like celebrating as soon as he hit it before Martinez had, because I guess they worked it up on the.
If we let Barco score, if we let Barco celebrate for his free kick goal that went off of two Cincinnati deflections, we'll let Franco celebrate his deflection goal into Joseph. They're all happy. It's all fine. Look, Barco celebrating that first free kick goal that took the deflection. Great, whatever. There's no denying the second one that he scored against Cincinnati, because that shit was ridiculous. That was an amazing goal, just disgustingly good. You know, and that going back to the DC game, did I say Cincy? I meant to say DC, the free kick that Barco scored in that game. You know, when we talk about like making excuses or kind of trying to be.
He scored a golazo against Cincinnati. He didn't take any deflection. It took deflection in Orlando.
Orlando was the one I was thinking. Yeah. That's right. No, yes, I had gotten those mixed up. So talking about the DC game and the result there, you know, on paper, it looks like that game was a lot closer than it really was. And I think that that's sort of why that game really stands out to me, is because if that's how Atlanta's going to have to get beat against quality opponents, is by ridiculous half volleys from outside or at the top of the 18.
Yeah.
I'm more than happy to take that week in and week out, because that is by far the exception. Like for DC to put two of those in is just almost unheard of in one match. I mean, I can't believe that they managed to put one in, much less two on us in the manner that they did, because it was just, both of those goals were just fantastic. And I hate that Joseph doesn't end up getting his 100th goal. Hopefully we'll see it this weekend. But he does sit currently at 99 goals across all competitions, which is pretty crazy.
He does. And now we don't know if he's going to be playing. We have a little bit of an update on Martinez, because he was limping around after the game and got a lot of treatment on the field after the game. But it's he's still being evaluated. We haven't heard what that evaluation was at the end of the day today, but they're looking at his knee again. And it doesn't, apparently it's not good.
Oh man.
So, I mean, I'm assuming he's not going to play. And then you just go back to the false nine thing that we did against Cincinnati and put Barco and Araujo up top. But anyway, we can get into that a little later. But I'm hoping it's okay. But I don't know. I don't want to get too negative about it.
Yeah, hopefully it's okay. Man, he's just had such an uphill battle with that thing. And I hate to feel like he's just one of those guys that's just the concept of easing back into it just doesn't exist for him. Like, he's gonna push it until he hurts something again. Like, it's going to be a consistent thing for him that he's going to have to deal with, I feel like, because he is going to push it so hard and he's not going to pull back on it at all. You know, he wants to contribute and he wants to perform in the way that we all know he's capable of doing. And it's been really nice seeing him get on the end of balls that you expect him to over the past couple of weeks, just scoring the kinds of goals that you expect him to score on half turns in the run of play, like he did against DC. That second goal he almost gets at the end of the DC game that hits the post was just a heartbreaker.
Yeah. Well, he had a chance, you know, in the first half where George Bello's streaking, you know, and on he jumped on that bad back pass from, I think it was Pine. And Bello just jumped on it, and Joseph was open for the pass right in the middle of the goal. And then Bello just took the shot, which I guess you're fine to do, but passing was the safer, was the more safer option in scoring a goal, but there you have it. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, Bello's been he's had eye on the goal for a couple of games now, man. I'm glad to see him slot one home against DC because the beginning of that DC game, he had Joseph, and Joseph was pretty pissed off about it that he doesn't lay it off to him. And he had a similar situation against Cincinnati when he gets subbed in late in that game where he just all he was looking at was the goal the entire time, and he had Joseph wide open on the back post to just drive it home too. So it was almost kind of like this big brother thing of Joseph dishing it off to him to be like, that's what you're supposed to do. Or, granted, it was Moreno doing it, but yeah, still. Man, and talk about an assist there. Moreno getting through, I think, a total of 5 players to lay that off to Bello at the end of that one was just insane.
It was comical, wasn't it? Like, Bill Hamid was so pissed after.
Oh, dude. And they cut away from it. Like, I went back and watched the broadcast after the fact. We were at the game Saturday. But I watched him Saturday for no less than 5 minutes after that, doing the same, like, just frustrated, like, back-breaking screams from his goal because he was so pissed off about it for at least 10 or 15 minutes.
Yep. Love it. Love to see the frustration for Bill Hamid. Love it.
Yeah. No kidding. All right. So Cincinnati again, not much to really take home from that. I think great goals from Atlanta, but that's what you're supposed to do against Cincinnati. Right.
Yep.
And they did it. They got it done. We expect to see more of that coming down the stretch. We've talked a little bit about Atlanta's schedule coming into the back half of the season. You've only really got, I want to say, 3 kind of marquee games in the back 9 that I can see that you really need. I mean, you expect to take home results against a good bit of them, but the ones that you really, really need to capitalize on, one of them being this weekend against Philly, and then you've still got Montreal and NYCFC on that remaining slate of games. I think that Inter Miami and, you know, obviously Toronto and Cincy are pretty much out of the hunt, but those other 3, Philly, Montreal, and NYCFC, those 3 games are really 6-point games whenever you think about it.
Inter Miami is still, they're still in the hunt. They're on 32 and they've got a game in hand on us.
Oh, they do. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was glad that the Red Bulls put 4 past them this weekend. That was great. I was happy.
I was thinking of Red Bulls, not, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Red Bulls are out. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like we can't let off the gas. One dropped week and we're going to be out of the playoff line. But it's going to be like back and forth the whole time, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the thing that's crazy with Inter Miami, you look at them right now and where their goal differential is sitting at. I mean, they're one of the bottom teams in the East with a minus 11 goal differential, somehow sitting in 9th place. I mean, Red Bull sitting with a positive goal differential and 23 points or 26 points sitting down in 11th. You know, I think that Inter Miami team, while in the standings, is certainly in the hunt as it relates to points statistically. You know, they're sitting at 9 wins. They're comparable from the wins and losses and draws to Atlanta United and obviously the game in hand that you mentioned. But from what they're doing as far as how they're scoring and how many points they're putting up, you know, I'm trying to scroll back through to see when their big sort of goals, what matches they had that were big goal scoring opportunities. And it doesn't really look like there's many of them. You know, their highest scoring games were really against Cincinnati, which, you know, Atlanta United's no different there. So,
yeah, I mean, they're one of the lowest scoring teams. They've got 24 goals, which is, you know, the same as Cincinnati down at the bottom. It looks like Chicago, they put up 3 against, and Toronto, they put up 3 against. But that's otherwise, it's like 1-0s and 2-1s, and then a whole bunch of losses.
Yeah, and they've got a relatively I wouldn't say difficult backstretch. They end with New England, which is really, you know, that's not exactly how I would want to end the season at this point. No. if you're on the edge looking to get in at playing the basically determined Supporters Shield winner this season in New England to on decision day, essentially. That's not how I would want to end the season, but
yeah, the last three games are us and DFC, and like you say, New England. That's
right.
They got to play Nashville this weekend. I'm
definitely and Portland
beat them. Yeah, Portland beat LAFC, didn't they, this weekend?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's going to be. Yeah.
So, like I said, they've got, you know, a handful of games that could, you know, really shake them up a good bit. Like I said, I mean, been saying it for a while, guys. The back half of Atlanta United's season is really favorable, and they certainly seem to be playing up to that level right now. Let's just hope that Joseph stays healthy, man. I mean, I hate to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I really do.
Oh, I know what other thing I wanted to mention about DC game. Our buddy Brad Guzan has gotten a lot of flack this season and in past seasons. He seems to be consistently he has a target on his back where it's either he's put the game on his back or he's to blame for every loss that we get sometimes. And I feel like this DC game was absolutely one of those games where give all the credit where credit's due to the offensive firepower, but if it weren't for Brad coming up with at least three really, really good saves in that game, that scoreline would have been completely different.
Oh, yeah. He's been, I feel like against Cincinnati as well, he's been, he was really good.
Yeah.
In fact, who else? Orlando, I mean, he was really good also. I feel like people harp on his distribution. And as long as he's like just, I guess it's not the best, but you know, there's a lot worse keepers that we could have in the league. And for him to have those sort of big reaction saves, I feel like outweigh the negative qualities that we're all seeing.
Absolutely.
Right now. I mean, the only problem with Brad Guzan is his salary.
I agree with that.
Completely. That's the only problem that I see with Guzan.
Because I don't think you're ever going to live up to that salary as a keeper. Like you're just, you're because you're always going to be put under a certain level of scrutiny that no other position is really going to be put under because the game sort of starts and ends with you in a lot of ways. Boy, as great as he did play Saturday, he's not without fault. He had a couple of balls that he played from a goal kick that went directly out of bounds or directly over the back line of DC. It's just like, what the hell are you doing, man? The guys behind, it's so funny. Every now and then you get like a, you know, just a casual fan coming to a game to watch a match. And we had some guys behind us that were like, there's a lot of stuff that I just don't understand about soccer. And like what was that right there? Like, I don't know why he just did that. He just kicked the ball completely out of play. I was like, yeah, he didn't mean to do that. But it's so funny. It's like, it just seems like it's chaos. It's just everything's everywhere until they get up near the goal. And then all of a sudden it comes together. I don't get it.
That's just because, you know, the more you watch it, the more you learn to appreciate it, and you can see what's happening. And I mean, I get it. I don't understand how anybody can understand what they're talking about with when you're running a play in American football. Like, I was watching some YouTube video about Peyton Manning being John Gruden, and he would be, and Eli Manning would have to translate the play. And it's just like, random words just pushed together and then they figure it out. It's just, it drives me nuts because it's such like, I feel like you really have to have been brought up within that game to like really understand it. I can't, I just don't have the attention span to learn it right now. And plus the Falcons suck and I don't have a college team. So.
Oh boy, I've been converted to Bills Mafia, so it's been a decent season so far. Big win this past weekend against Miami, so we'll take it.
Was it just your obsession with O.J. Simpson that you decided to become a Bills fan, or
Marshawn Lynch, mostly.
having to watch all those O.J. Simpson documentaries that came up the other year?
Marshawn Lynch and C.J. Spiller and Sammy Watkins. All the Clemson players that have filtered through there over the years. Not to mention my fiance being from there. But
Yeah, C.J.
Spiller. Lest I speak ill of her, and she puts me through a table, not for funsies.
Well, that's good that she likes football.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she's bought in on Atlanta United too, which has been great. So
fantastic.
Yeah. All right. So anything else on either the Cincy or DC matches?
Yeah, I'll have a gripe about some of the refereeing decisions on DC. So Brilliant pulls Joseph down. He's in on goal. It's a yellow card offense, and he's already on a yellow card, but the ref just lets it go because, you know, he doesn't want to send him off, I guess. But
and then turns around and gives
Franco a yellow card.
Yeah.
And now he's suspended.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck?
Pretty fucking ridiculous. Also, the Araujo yellow seemed to come out of nowhere. You know, some of those fouls, I think Michelle was asking about the fouls in that match. Some of them were overtly aggressive, like zero play on the ball and zero accountability from the officials. So what are you gonna do, man?
Oh yeah, no, we DC, what, they had 25 fouls. I mean, that is ridiculous.
I think I saw, was it, yeah, I think I saw that DC commits the most fouls in the league, and Atlanta United is the most fouled team in the league right now.
Far the most fouled.
We're the most fouled team in the league right now, and I think that DC has committed the most fouls in the league. I think I saw that.
Probably.
I think I saw that. Brett Crawford saying that was a second yellow for sure. Yeah, I think that. How many red cards have there even been this season across the league? Like, I feel like I haven't heard of many games having teams go down to 10 men this year.
Well, our good friends Orlando went down a man. So that was who got sent off.
Oh, apparently Franco's yellow was for delaying a free kick. I didn't realize that.
It doesn't matter, but it's still like, you're giving leniency to your left hand and then not giving to your right hand.
Orlando went down to 9. That's right. Oh, I forgot about 9? That. I forgot about that. Oh man. What I wouldn't give to see them be down to 9 points.
Oh yeah, Antonio Carlos got a straight red.
That's right.
That was it. I don't think they got two guys sent off.
Nani and Andres Perea against Montreal.
Oh, against Montreal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love to see Nani get a red card. And love to see the fragility of the mental state of Orlando coming to the fore and them sort of breaking.
It's one of my favorite MLS season traditions, really, is to see Orlando get really high in the standings just to have the bottom fall out and them to shit the bed and stumble all the way down to the bottom of the table before season's end. Hey, at least they've made the playoffs once last year in their history. It only took a pandemic for them to do it, but hats off to them. Hopefully they can do it this year. But the way things are going for Orlando right now, I would not be so optimistic. I think that they've got one of the more challenging back halves of the season where they don't have any. I mean, they've got Cincinnati once, but every other game that they've got New England that they've got to play twice. They play Nashville twice. They play Montreal twice. DC.
They play Nashville twice?
Yeah. Like I said, I would be really, really concerned if I was an Orlando City fan looking down the stretch, because as of right now, I don't think that I'm trying to see the last game they won. So it's been over a month since they've won a match. Their last win was against Chicago on August 21st. They drew Inter Miami the week following, and it's been all L since then. So, and they play New England this weekend and Nashville on Wednesday on a short turnaround. So, It is gonna be a long, long road home for those guys down the stretch.
They play New England without one of their best center backs in Antonio Carlos. That sucks.
Yeah.
Oh man, it's kind of like, you know, in the Premier League, Arsenal have traditionally had St. Totteringham's Day, where it's the day in the Premier League where Arsenal will definitely finish higher than Tottenham. I mean, it hasn't worked out for Arsenal recently, much to my joy. But maybe we should start a tradition like that with Atlanta United and Orlando.
Dude, yeah. I remember, what was it, like 3 years ago when they had won like 10 straight and they were just like, it was like the first half of the season. Like, we hadn't even crossed midway and they were like, oh, we're winning the fucking supporter shield at this rate. And then they lost 10 straight. Like, it's just laughable.
It was 2017. Cause remember we started doing the pod and we're like, oh man, we talked a lot of shit to Orlando and now we probably don't want to play him. It was Kyle Larin. Like Kyle Larin was doing, scoring all the goals. And then, yeah, they just committed.
Really,
suicide.
Really bad. Really, really bad. Really, really bad. Oh man, Dirty Bird person. I always called it St. Orlando Day till last year. Yeah. All right. Is it time? The time all the people have been waiting for? I think so. Buckle up, kids. It's time for the download.
All right, Philadelphia. Oh, I'm so disappointed that Philadelphia got beaten by Club America and dashed all hopes of an MLS team winning CONCACAF.
They didn't just lose. Year. They lost really badly.
They did. And they played New England before. Give them credit to when they played New England. They played most of their kids, most of their reserve teams, because they wanted to save their starters for their most important game they've ever played in the history of their club. But they lost it 2-0. But they lost against New England also, but it was only by 1-0, which, you know, was good. But New England were pretty full health, and I think they're only missing Carlos Heel. You know, they're just the star striker and assist creator. So, all right, last five. They beat NYCFC 1-0. They drew with Montreal 1-1. They lost to DC 3-1. Oof, that sucks. Losing to New England 1-0. And then I threw the Club America one in there just for consistency and chronological order. And then they beat Orlando 3-1. I'm glad to see them beat Orlando. So they've only got like 6 goals in their last 5 MLS games. And they've also conceded 6 in the last 5 MLS. You know, it's 8 if you include the loss to Club America in the most important game in their club's history. It's so sad that that happened. But, you know, karma's a bitch. Compare that to Atlanta United. We've scored 12 goals in our last 5 and conceded 5 goals. So, you know, our defense, and we've been saying it pretty much all year, our defense, you know, it's pretty damn good. So in the last 5, they got 7 points out of it. We've had 12. It could be a real good game. I'm disappointed that Martinez is going to be out. And I think we probably go back to that that false 9 with Barco and Araujo, and I guess Moreno is the false 9, but we're just going to be play up top in 2 up top with Barco and Araujo. So it's probably not even a false 9 at that point, because I wouldn't start Conway, because I don't think Conway is going to match up very well against Elliott and Glasnes. Because those are both strong guys, and Elliott's 26, Glasnes is 27. So they've been around the block. They know what they're doing. And then Jose Martinez is not as strong as those guys, but he's 27, and he's been a fantastic player this year. Jose Martinez, I've been very impressed with him. He was great against us. Just, not like Santos levels of shithousery, but, enough, but it's kind of like what you want to see. He's kind of like that Russell Knauss mold that I like, but he's a much more technical and better player than Knauss. So in watching all the average player positions in the past couple of games, they always seem to push everyone that in their average position is in the opponent's half, apart from Elliott and Glesnes. And then Jose Martinez will sit basically in the center of the field, but still, and just, you know, help them out, like screen those two in the case of a counterattack. So they really push everyone up. And I think Wagner, who's been a fantastic left back for them, he's been one of the better left backs in the league. He scored a couple of goals. He's also made a mistake here and there that's led to a goal. Same on the other side with Mbezo, but he hasn't scored that many goals. But you know, man, that guy Kasper Schmelke right up top, he is just in the right place at the right time. He's almost in that Bradley White Phillips mold. He's just there and can just score goals whenever the ball gets very close to him, which is highly frustrating. But you know, we know how we can defend him. We've defended him in the past, though I think the last two times he's always scored on us. But it's been through ridiculous breakdowns. I think it was on a counter that he last scored on us, where we had everyone pushed up towards the end of the field. Alejandro Bedoya got subbed because he got injured against Orlando. So it looks like Freddie Montero probably slot into that because he's played that right midfield spot a few times. And that would leave the Hungarian Gazdag to fill that attacking midfielder role. So if you're looking at the four in the back in Wagner, Elliott, Glesnes, and Mbezo, Jose Martinez in front of them. And then you've got to make up the rest of their midfield diamond. So on the left, you'd have Flock. On the right, you would have Montero, and Gazdag would be that head of the diamond with Schmelke and Corey Burke on either side of him pushing up front. Then, I mean, like we said, their run, they did beat Orlando, but they're going to be at home again. So they've got that going for them. But their run of form hasn't been that great. I think they're sitting just below the playoff line. Yeah.
They're in seventh right now.
They're in seventh. Okay. On 35 points, they've got a game in hand on us. So this is one we really want to stomp on, to push them back out. Cause I mean, if they lose, there's probably a good chance, DC's playing Cincinnati. So yeah, if we lose, yeah. DC,
6 point game, man, 6 point game. Yeah. These are 6 point games here.
So I feel like we're going to go back with a back three of Campbell, Robinson, and Walks. I feel that's going to be good. That works. Robinson's got his rest now. Starting with Bello and Lennon again on the left and right-hand side. Why not play Rosetto and Sosa in the middle? I mean, I feel like they're our strongest center mid and center defensive mid players right now. Moreno up top in that attacking mid role, and then Barco Ruju pushed up front. But Moreno's gonna he's gonna glide around, and Rosetta will probably fill in a hole when he goes. So that's what I would do. I'm gonna start my best players. We've got a whole week off, so I can't imagine there's gonna be any rotation. Well, apart from Joseph.
Joseph will be out, but I think you're right, Dan. I think our back line is the back line that we've been expecting or that we've been playing mostly, and I think we're going to need it, particularly with Joseph being out. So I expect to see Walks, Miles, and Franco back there coming into that match.
Franco's out.
Oh, that's right. He is out.
I'm putting Campbell back.
Campbell probably will be in there, to your point. I completely forgot about that. So the question is, with Joseph out, what rotation do we see on that end of the ball? My first thought is, I guess, like you said, Araujo's probably up there up top, like what we played. When was that? A couple weeks ago against Nashville. That was
against Cincinnati. Martinez was playing against Cincinnati. Then it was going to be against Orlando.
Yes, that was it. So yeah, I think that's probably the way that Pineda rolls it out. I don't see it being a high scoring game like what we saw against Cincinnati or against DC for that matter. Even with the rest, I think, especially if Joseph is out, To Kendrick's point earlier, I don't think Atlanta is a team that's going to draw nil-nil anymore. I don't think I'll ever call that play, but I can see it being 1-1, and that's going to be my call for this weekend, is 1-1 with Barco scoring the lone goal for Atlanta.
One apiece, huh? Yeah, I was looking at to see, so Philly concede at the beginning of halves. They've conceded six in the first 15 minutes, and then they conceded seven in the second half, first 15 minutes. Being the most dangerous on the flip, so on the back half of each first half and second half, which we have seen them do before. So I don't think we hold a clean sheet, and we're going up to Philadelphia, which is why I think they'll probably score a goal.
Yeah.
But if we want to put, this would be a good, I have a feeling they're going to score first as well. So I think this is going to be a real test of mental resolve on Atlanta United, with that Pineda's Atlanta United has not really experienced as much. So I think with this resolve and the looseness of the guys, I think we pull this one off. I'm going for a 2-1.
All right.
2-1 win with Araujo, and I reckon Moreno gets one too.
All right. Well, if there's one way to keep Tim from winning this year, it's to not have him record so he can't throw down a score prediction and make sure we record during bath time. So he can't even be in the trap to put it in there. So no points for Tim. I don't care. If you're not here to put it in whenever we go live, it doesn't count.
Well, we could just put in like 6-0.
Oh, that's true. And but then it would somehow come true.
Which is be a good thing.
6-0 Philly, and then it comes true?
No.
All right, let's see what we got. Elliot Beaven, 1-0 Atlanta. Jay Hennaball, 1-0 Atlanta. We send Guzan up for a last-minute corner, and he pulls off an Allison Becker. Brittany has 2-1 Atlanta, Barco and Araujo.
Simpatico, Brittany, simpatico.
Yeah. All right, man. Anything else looking ahead? We will be recording again before. Oh, we got another new name in the trap, 0 Degree Gaming. 3-0 Martinez with a brace, and Araujo with Barco getting an assist. Oh,
I hope so.
I meant to ask you, did you see that the FIFA ratings came out?
Yeah, what a joke.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. But probably not for the same reasons that you were saying it. I think the thing that surprised me the most was the defender ratings the fact that Franco has a higher rating than
the walks.
Than walks and Miles Robinson. They don't even get inside of the top 10 or whatever.
Well, I can understand walks, but Robinson's got wildly shortchanged there.
That's true. Yeah, exactly. I don't get that at all. I love seeing Luis Araujo come in though with a 77. I mean, that's pretty solid. And Joseph being at an 80, pretty awesome there too. But I think that was the biggest head scratcher to me, was not seeing
Miles is the thing to me.
Not seeing Miles there. I mean, he's a USMNT defender now that that's huge, right. And it might just be off of last. You got to think about that too. This, a lot of this is based off of last season. So he really has he was great last year, but he certainly had a standout performance this year across all competitions. So,
yeah. Well, they've also got Blaise Matuidi at 83, and he was just complete shit.
Yeah.
Complete shit.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's a little bit of a head scratcher for sure. But love seeing Joseph on there, all things considered. So yeah, that's all I've got for this week. Anything else on your end? You think Ole Kamara still gets the Golden Boot. To Tim's point, he's just going to PK his way all the way to the Golden Boot.
Who is in the lead in the Golden Boot right now?
He is.
Oh, it is Kamara?
Yeah, unless it changed over the weekend. But let me see. MLS goals.
Yes, 16 goals.
Yeah. Bro, he scored Rudy two PKs. 14. He scored two PKs last week. So.
All right. Yeah. I think we've got, what, Joseph's on 9. Yeah, he's still got a ways to go. Yeah. I mean, potentially. I mean, you can't count out Rui Diaz. But, all those penalties. He's had 7 penalties.
Yeah.
Seven penalties to Rui Diaz's 2.
Exactly.
Yeah, probably.
PK his way all the way to a Golden Boot. Crazy. Let's see. Well, we did have a couple. We had a couple other score predictions come in. 3-2 Atlanta with Moreno, Barco, and Araujo scoring from Chiefs coach Steve's. 1-1 Dirty Bird Person. 2-1 Atlanta from Richard Gordon. People agreeing with the disrespect to Miles. No way Carlos Vela is an 83. Miles should be a 75 from Elliot Beaven. Let's see here. All right. Sounds like Zero Degree Gaming has already placed a bet on Atlanta to win the MLS Cup. Man, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see it.
What are the odds?
What does sportsbettingdime.com say?
What do they say, Kev?
I don't know. All right, man. Well, in the meantime, I know that you can find Tim on Twitter or on Instagram. I think he's been getting back to the woodworking whenever he's not changing diapers. You can find him at Tim Herb. Dan, still riding the bike, I see. Getting your still notifications the in the morning. But whenever you're not doing cross training or
rolling.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Love some rolling, man. It really helps your recovery.
What about – but you're also on Twitter, right? Where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me at DNGMS. Or Peloton, to the power of Dan.
There you go.
The power of Dan.
Find me at The Architect. That's at @_ARC, TECT. Collectively, you can find all of us at Home Before Dark. That's before spelled B and the number 4. We hope to see you out there next time. If not, we'll see you here next time. Be sure to like, subscribe, hit that bell icon to get a notification each and every time we go live. Until then, as always, be home before dark.
Awesome.
That's it.
That's all I got, man. I've got surgery tomorrow. I'm so anxious. I'm not really. I'm just sad I'm not.